Hey everybody, Scott McNulty here. Before we start the show, I have a little announcement to make. No, I'm not canceling the show. No, we're not going to start watching episodes sequentially. That's madness. But what we are doing is a survey. Yes, everybody loves surveys. You know what I love? Sponsors. Sponsors pay to have me tell you about great things. Part of what I'm asking you to do is take a quick survey. It'll take 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes even, which is even better than taking 5 minutes. And you can just tell our advertisers a little bit about yourself, and then that makes Random Trek more interesting to advertisers, which makes me happy. And really, don't you want me to be happy? I think you do. So if you want to take the survey, please go to podsurvey.com/trek. That's podsurvey, podsurvey.com/trek. You'll take less than 5 minutes, fill out some information. It's completely anonymous. Don't worry, we're not tracking you. And when you're finished, you can choose to enter a monthly drawing to win up to a $100 Amazon gift card. And I would suggest, if you do win that $100 Amazon gift card, buy yourself the original series Blu-rays, if you don't already have them, because they're beautiful. You will thank me. And I thank you for filling out the survey. On to the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight is Merlin Mann. Merlin, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
It is a pleasure. Merlin, how might the listeners know of you?
I do stuff on the internet. Mainly today, I do a lot of podcasts, like a ridiculous number of podcasts and guest appearances. I used to be internet famous, and now I'm merely a nuisance. Oh. And so sometimes I write things. I speak in places. You may have been cursed by hearing the phrase Inbox Zero. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. But no, mostly I hang out and make podcasts, listen to podcasts, and I hang out on Twitter and annoy people.
And tweet.
I tweet a little. Get a couple drinks in me, have some tweets.
Yeah, and we met many years ago in person at a Macworld where I did a little interview with you.
You did a huge interview with me. You were so much taller than I imagined. I'd read your work. You were like half again the Scott that I expected. So you're a tall man.
From reading my work, you figured I was a tiny man.
Well, maybe impish. Maybe like that lady who only lives 9 years with the fold-up ears. Like, yes, I thought you might be a little bit elfin, maybe kind of a Middle-earth. You're a little bit Middle-earth. You're like a big Middle-earth guy.
I'm like a large hobbit, I think is how people would describe me.
Maxi-sized.
That's right. I'm not a fun-sized hobbit. But we're not here to talk about Middle-earth or how great I am, even though I don't think anyone mentioned that. We're here to talk about Star Trek. Oh, my God. Death Wish, yes, that's the episode. Not Charles Bronson. That would have been a very different episode. We're talking about an episode of Voyager called Death Wish from Season 2. I believe it's Episode 18. I know that for a fact because I just looked it up on the internet. But before we get into that, Merlin, I want to talk about your interest in Star Trek and whether or not you would consider yourself a Star Trek fan.
I would not. I'm not anti-Star Trek, but... My background on Star Trek with the TOS, you call it, right?
Yes.
Was that, you know, it's just funny. It's just funny how certain things stick and certain things don't. Like, I was the hugest Star Wars nerd when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And really, up until now, I still am. But Star Trek didn't really stick with me. I was super familiar with it. It was kind of everywhere. You know, even as I was coming up, I think it came out the year I was born. So, you know, I was familiar. I'd seen the animated series. But for some reason, like, our Star Trek ran on our UHF station, I think usually at 5 o'clock. And it was always kind of a downer, you know, because you'd watch Bullwinkle, you'd see Dennis the Menace, and then it's like, ugh. And I never could get into it as a kid. And, you know, if you don't get into it as a kid, as a young kid, you may not pick it up. the second Star Trek, the Picard era came out right as I was in college. Mm-hmm. I just didn't watch it because I wasn't watching a ton of TV then. So,
oh, you were popular. You were hanging out with people, not watching television. Is that what you're saying?
I'm Merlin. I have things to say about Descartes. But the thing is, in later years, you know, it's kind of unavoidable. Mm. And I, at some point a few years ago, probably from listening to nerds like you and the Incomparable Crew, I did start poking around. I guess back when we were idiotically paying for Hulu, I would watch certain like classic episodes from the original series. But I'm probably one of the few people you'll meet that knows Will Wheaton, but has never seen a full episode of that series. but no, I have a tremendous appreciation for it. Just in the sense of like, I really get why people love Star Trek, and I love it by extension for the same reasons. I love their vision of a certain kind of world that I think was maybe not unique in science fiction in its eras, but I don't know. It's kind of I think a special view of how the world could be that is really swell. But no, I know nothing about it. I've never seen, this is my first Voyager. I've never seen Deep Space 69. I've never seen the, now there's the one that I think is Star Trek that's not Star Trek, right?
What's that Babylon one? 5, is that the
never
one
seen Babylon 5. That's not Star Trek. Though,
it
right?
is not Star Trek. Not, ding, not Star Trek.
Star Trek or not Star Trek?
It's a new podcast. I'm
that's a new podcast. They're all 40 seconds long. The, but no, actually, I have gotten more interested in it. But no, I am far from a perfect guest for your show, but I feel like I'm super interested to talk about this one because, no, I've never seen Voyager. I kind of was familiar with some of the characters from just pop culture, mm-hmm. but I've never seen a full episode of the show. I don't know anything about the background on the series. I don't know to be honest, a lot of what I know about Star Trek now is from listening to this show. It's kind of embarrassing. But I feel like this was a pretty good and interesting episode that felt like it was, I'm guessing for a Star Trek fan, a Trekker in 1996 or whatever, this must have been kind of a cool episode because it's a bit of a crossover, right?
It is a bit of a crossover. And so this episode involves everyone's favorite omnipotent being, Q, but two Qs, which this is not the first time there have been multiple Qs, but it's a trope that they bring out every once in a while, who brings in, so we all know Q. Did you know who Q was?
I knew the name Q, but I could not tell. You know how like every Star Trek series has like the weird guy, the Spock. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You got the guy who has a face like clay.
Yep.
You got the guy who's yellow, right? You got the yellow guy from the Will Wheaton show.
Data.
Okay, sure. And I figured he was the quirky source of non-human interest, but I didn't know anything about the continuum or any of that stuff coming into this. I knew about Red from Orange is the New Black. I knew about her.
Yes.
And I knew about the guy who plays Quinn was, I immediately recognized him from Phantom of the Paradise, the Paul Williams movie. Did you ever see that?
I have not seen that, but I looked into his IMDb because I recognize his face from, he's
yeah,
like
exactly.
In
he's
everything.
That guy. He's that totally guy. That guy.
And he's been in lots of stuff.
Phantom of the Paradise is a treat. You should really, and he plays Beef, who's a rock star in Phantom of the Paradise.
He, according to Wikipedia, he also wrote the lyrics to a Grateful Dead song. So
I did not know that.
Kudos to him. And he plays a Q who is suicidal, set for him.
Very interesting show to have watched twice with my 7-year-old daughter. It led to some very interesting and, I don't want to say awkward, but like unexpected conversations where, you know, if you're ever around a kid, you start to realize how interesting and weird and awkward it is to try and talk about certain issues without, you know, inserting your own opinions. And I thought it was a very provocative topic. So I don't know. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, it was one of the great things about Star Trek is that they are generally not afraid to approach big topics and in a, you know, a science fictional way, but ponder the big issues. And of course, you know, the right to end one's life is a very big issue and something that is divisive amongst many people and in our current society. And so it's interesting to see the characters in Star Trek deal with this. So I want to, what did you think of So Voyager has a central premise, and I wonder if it came across in that they are lost.
No, I didn't get that.
Okay, so the premise of the show is that they are lost. They're far away from Earth, and they're like hundreds of years away from Earth.
I should amend that just a little bit. I got the feeling that that creepy Q guy, Q Prime, mm-hmm. dangling the Earth in front of Janeway was a pretty big deal. I definitely got that yes. there was, we need to get back to Earth. So yeah, in that sense, I didn't get that as the Prime thing of the story, but. Yeah, okay, that helps.
Yeah, it's a little flavor. And I think that Voyager is at its best when it's dealing with that issue of, oh, we have to get back to Earth, that's our central mission. And generally, Voyager fails in that they kind of gloss that over that, and they don't really deal with that issue, and they're having fun space adventures, no one's thinking about, oh my god, we're hundreds of years away from all of our friends and family.
Is it purely like a serialized sort of, or not serialized, is it purely a, what's the word, anthology show? Or is there like kind of is there an arc to the seasons that about the story about getting closer to Earth that extends beyond a given episode?
So later in later seasons, they start doing more and more arc stuff, as is the case with, this was on concurrently with Deep Space Nine, and Deep Space Nine really towards the end of its run, what went full whole hog in with, like, 14-part stories that they were doing. Voyager never went that full into it, but certainly there was a through line, and it wasn't like, it felt like in the original series, they were all very kind of hermetically sealed. No one ever talked about what happened in any other episode because that's just not the way you did things in the 60s. But in Voyager, certainly, if things happened, there were repercussions in other episodes, but not like a huge arcs or anything like that.
Okay.
So it's a missed opportunity, but it was the 90s. It was a different time.
Are the cues and the continuum, I mean, how important are they in the universe? I read up a little bit on them. They sound like almost like the Phoenix Force, like extremely powerful beings that have always existed and obviously for purposes of this story are essentially immortal. How are they, like, on the one hand, how important are they to the series, and how beloved are they by the fans?
Well, that is a fine question, Merlin. I will answer the last one first, because that's the way I roll. I believe that the Q are also divisive amongst fandom. Our good friend Jason Snell can't stand the character of Q because he thinks it's a cheap kind of way out, because everything,
like a deus ex machina,
exactly, because Q shows up, he does all kinds of crazy stuff, and then the clock resets at the end. Because
can they really like move galaxies and stuff?
They can do almost anything. There is a good episode of The Next Generation. Q is a character, he was introduced in The Next Generation. He had an interesting relationship with Captain Picard, and there's an episode in The Next Generation where Q is banned from the Q continuum and made mortal, and he's on the Enterprise. I think that's a good episode, so check that out. I don't remember the name of it, but you could Google that. And that also, it doesn't really struggle with the same, like, Q didn't want to kill himself, but he wanted to adapt to being a human, and he had a lot of trouble doing that. And there's a fun part where this moon is going to fall into a planet, and he's down in engineering with Geordi, and Geordi's like, oh, we really need to solve this thing. How can we move this moon? And Q says, we'll just change the gravitational constant of the universe, which is something that he could do before.
Wow.
Now he can't. So that gives you an idea of their power.
Okay.
And so some people like that. I think that Q is fun, and whenever there's a Q episode, at the end, things are pretty much going to be the way they are, but there's going to be a fun ride in between.
Would you consider him the agent of chaos here?
He is an agent of chaos. and he shows up in The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine is funny because when he shows up, the central character, Sisko, punches him in the face, to which he responds, Picard never hit me. And then in Voyager, where, he tries to have this kind of chummy relationship with Janeway, and it doesn't.
Oh, brother,
really.
We got to talk about that.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that.
I feel like my general impression was, on the one hand, like, well, I had two pretty strong feelings. One is that, even as I sat there and watched, I was trying not to, like, look at what's it called? The Star Trek.
Memory Alpha.
Yeah, I was trying not to rely too heavily on that because I wanted to just take it as is. And part of the exercise was that I wasn't familiar with the show and I wanted to keep the spirit of that. But I had two kind of warring strong impressions. The second impression was that I was, I have to say, you know, like one thing I love about speculative fiction and sci-fi is that ability, as you sort of said earlier, to kind of like the same way that like the best movie about the Gulf War is Battlestar Galactica in mm-hmm. some ways, right? The way that you can kind of cover up, or the X-Men is kind of about discrimination, right? And in this case, what? I thought it was a very, yeah, believe it or not, turns out the, but in this case, like I thought the way that they were handling this, difficult and extremely complicated and paradoxical modern issue was really good. But at the same time, I also felt like, wow, this show is really schizophrenic. It really can't decide which show it wants to be. Like there's a lot of shucking and jiving with moving around and hiding in different places for a while. And mm-hmm. if I even as somebody who's not familiar with the franchise, it felt like there was a lot of fan service in this. Of like having fun with like what a Q can do, and oh my gosh, what are two Qs going to do with each other, and little jokes like I guess the cook guy is worried about his job or something.
Oh, Neelix.
Neelix. But you know, so it was weird. I mean, but another thing as an outsider that I thought was interesting was even as it was kind of a grown-up story, it was something my kid had. As long as I was able to be the glossary for a couple things, like what is asylum? Like, you know, what is, you know, suicide?
Yeah, the fun questions.
She was able to follow it fine. She really enjoyed it. And she's a 7-year-old kid who's watched it twice and is like quoting lines from it. So,
and I love that she said that Quinn was a space nerd.
She did. She leaned into me. We watched it again this afternoon and she goes, I think that guy's a space nerd.
And he totally is.
He keeps doing that gesture. What is that gesture he does?
So it's just a flourish when he uses his Q powers.
It's very fancy.
You know, you have to have a little joie de vivre as a Q.
But it was a little bit kind of weirdly all over the map in some ways. It really, you know, just when I thought I understood the direction it was going, it would kind of jog a little bit. And sometimes it was... And again, as an outsider, sometimes it was pretty jarring, like how it would go from the sublime to the ridiculous. And then like having Q, I mean, God, when Q pops up in bed with her in his little nightcap, is he always that creepy?
He's pretty creepy. John DeLancey, who's the actor, is very good at being creepy. I don't know if he is creepy. I've never met him.
I mean, does he think he's pulling it off? The character?
I think the character is an interesting character in that he's omnipotent. But he is not self-aware, so...
Well, in the case of both of them, they seem a little bit spectrum-y, where, like, like for example, the inability to understand getting rid of all of the men on the ship to we don't even know where is more than an inconvenience. Well, like, Quinn seemed like he genuinely didn't understand why that was a problem.
I think the Q are very alien. So they manifest themselves as humans because they are they're talking with humans, but they are not humans, right? They're a different species of alien that have gone on to a different level of existence, and so they are, as you know, we think of ants. You know, in that scenario, the ants would be the humans, and the Q would be the humans. What?
Right? Did you ever read Slaughterhouse-5?
I did.
I mean, not so different in some ways from Tralfamadorians.
True.
Just in that sense of like, it's hard for me to even come up with a visualization of how limited your view of the universe and time is.
Exactly. And that's why when it made it so interesting when they went to the Q continuum to kind of show, you know, what life is like as a Q. So they had to manifest it in a way that someone could understand, someone being a human and a Vulcan, because Tuvok was there as well. And so it's just this like endless road with probably somewhere in California, but like a roadhouse and a weathered...
Like western exactly. Kind of... Yeah, I you know, we probably don't have time to go into too much detail, but I really felt for Captain Janeway because the way that these legal proceedings went seemed very... Like, I want to use the phrase kangaroo court. Like, you dismiss Isaac Newton before anybody has a chance to cross-examine him.
Well, who wants to hear from Newton?
Have you looked in a mirror lately?
Yeah, I found that segment where Q brings Riker, who is from The Next Generation. So that's total fan service.
Total fan service.
He had no reason to be there. And Isaac Newton. and Maury Ginsberg, I believe is his name, as proof of kind of like, this is your life.
That was so weird.
Or It's a Wonderful Life, right? If you didn't exist, Q, these people, Riker would have never been born. Isaac Newton wouldn't have figured out gravity. And
every time a rock festival happens, right, a Q gets his suicide.
Exactly.
The funny part is my wife happened to walk in the room right after Isaac and Maury appeared, and she goes, "That's Maury Ginsberg." And I go, "Yeah, that's the guy's name." She goes, no, his name is Maury Ginsberg. I went to Santa Cruz with him.
That is fantastic.
Isn't that awesome? Apparently, it turns out, whoever directed this liked the guy's actual real name and used it for the character.
There you go. Banana Slugs.
Hey, go Slugs.
See, my wife's father also went to Santa Cruz. That's the only reason I know that. But that's fantastic. That's very funny. And I was also thinking, you know, speaking about, you know, same names and kind of who's on first moments, everyone in the Q continuum is called Q.
Right.
That must be very confusing.
Because they're like manifestations of a force in some ways, right? I mean, it's confusing because we're seeing them as these, you know, character actors in uniforms, but it's more like they're just choosing to present themselves, you know, like a classic gray, right? They're presenting themselves in some way that we can grok.
That's right. I knocked a yo-yo off of my desk because I was so excited.
Is that a euphemism?
Oh, it's totally a euphemism. You know what I mean, ladies? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So the Q, I think that this episode has a lot of interesting ideas and some weird moments. And I agree with you that it doesn't quite know where to set itself, because whenever Q shows up, and I'm talking about Q Prime, there's always a bit of... He's menacing because he doesn't really understand humans, and he kind of thinks of them as playthings because he's kind of bored, so he just shows up and does stuff like, you know, manifests a mariachi band on the bridge of the Enterprise for no apparent reason.
Oh, dear.
Which he did in one episode. But then he also, you know, knocks the Enterprise out and makes them encounter the Borg for the first time. So, you know, it's a good and bad with the Q. And having the other Q, Quinn, talk about... you know, how miserable it is being a Q because he is immortal and he has done everything in the universe more than once. And he is just so bored.
Right. And it is fun. And there's some nice production design touches when they go to the town. You see the, you know, the always open infinity, you know, sign and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And, you know, the crazy part of it was they actually do, like, it feels like right when they start to get, and I know it's, you know, it's fun family entertainment from the 90s. You don't want to put too much into it, but I kind of sometimes felt like right when they were getting into, they had like two or three very interesting ideas that would then kind of suddenly get lost in this ocean of wackadoodle.
Right. Then he's hiding at the Big Bang, and they're getting attacked by photons.
Well, and yeah, it was kind of like a, I don't know, it reminded me a little bit of a, say, Christopher Eccleston, Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Combined with this, there was this movie I saw when I was a little kid that I just can't get out of my mind when I watched this. Did you ever see a very old movie called The Story of Mankind?
I have not.
It's this, I'm looking at IMDb now, and this used to be on the 1 o'clock movie sometimes. It's starring Vincent Price and Ronald Colman. And it's basically the devil, played by Vincent Price, and the spirit of man, played by Ronald Colman, having a debate with God over what should happen to mankind. And then it cuts into this ridiculous like series of vignettes involving like the Marx Brothers showing that mankind can be saved because look at the crazy fun stuff they're capable of. And the devil goes, yes, but think about the evil they're capable of. And like there's something about it, like it wants to be very, like It's a Wonderful Life, it wants to be very elevating, but like it does it through like a lot of kind of buffoonery. So, I mean, I wasn't dead set against that. I mean, this seems pretty elevated for, like, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock viewing in 1996.
Yeah, I think they wanted to have, since Q is so wacky, it's kind of almost contractually obligated that he's going to do wacky stuff. And then you have this even wackier Q who doesn't quite know how to control his powers. And so you get hijinks.
One of them wears lipstick and one of them doesn't.
That's right. I did notice the color of his lips, and I thought, I don't know if that's normal.
Yeah.
But who am I to judge?
No, he might just be low on space oxygen.
He might be. I'm going to not go down that road. I did like another moment of fan service. So when they were doing the little hide and seek, so, you know, one Q wants to find the other, so he's hiding in, you know, the Big Bang and subatomic space, and then on a Christmas tree, which is amusing because Hallmark has a series of Star Trek ornaments that come out every year, and the year this show was produced, you will be shocked to find out that the ornament that they produced was the USS Voyager. So,
oh, that's clever.
So it's a little fun inside joke for people who are super nerdy and may or may not be surrounded currently by some Star Trek ornaments.
Hmm.
I shall not name any names.
No names shall not be named.
No.
But the core conceit of it in the midst of all the wackadoodle was, I think, still very interesting. And honestly, like, it led to an interesting, awkward conversation with my kid where I had to pause it, like, you know, like I'll do that drives her crazy. But if she has a question, I will, you know, pause and say, like, hey, let's talk about this for a minute. Mm-hmm. And I felt the need to be, you know, fedora guy for a minute and go, like, so are you getting, like, what's weird about this? Like, that there's this guy or this, you know, race of people who have always lived and will always live. That's what immortal means. Like, immortal means, like, you know, under ordinary universe circumstances, you can't die. It's not that you won't die, it's that you can't die. And, like, that's what makes Dracula lonely, right? Is, like, that you're always going to be here. You're always going to see everybody around you die. You can already see this is going great for a 4:15 viewing of this movie. But I mean, it got me to, like, explaining something that I think is a very interesting idea, probably way too much for a 7-year-old, but I was like, you know, if the government decides that you did something really bad in America, they can kill you. Like, if you hurt somebody on purpose really, really bad, the government is allowed to kill you. But the government also has laws that say you're not allowed, if you're very sick and very, if you don't have control of your faculties anymore, that you're not allowed to kill yourself. Like, does that seem like, you know, a paradox at all, you know? So we've been talking about paradoxes lately, and as you do.
Well, it's yes.
But I mean, at the heart of it, that was very interesting. And I think one of the interesting twists that maybe, I don't know if it was unintentionally this interesting, was, well, look at you. You're fine.
Right.
Right? It isn't that you just have the right by fiat to decide how your life goes. It's that, like, we, part of this, and again, I think it's important. I thought it was smart to frame it as an asylum hearing and not an actual trial.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do a lot of hand waving about the legal parts of this,
right.
But I thought it got down to an interesting part, which was, well, you seem fine. You're like, people would kill to have your problems. Like, you know, you get to do everything and go everywhere. Is tedium enough of a case to make it legal for you to kill yourself? And I don't know. I think that brought up an interesting meta point, which is, like, you know, when we think about these issues, like, who do we decide is sympathetic in something like that? I think it's actually a very interesting topic.
Yes, I agree. I think that, and this show, I think that having kind of this little captain's courtroom asylum trial is, like, the perfect Star Trek way of dealing with this, because, you know, even going back to the original series, there's always been a lot of paperwork that you have need to fill out, and people are signing things. There's a lot of bureaucratic, you know, stuff that needs to get through. And so to figure out whether or not this Q has the right to kill himself, which Janeway actually kind of says, you know, I am not, that's not why we're here. I don't want to, you know, it's not my decision about whether or not he can kill himself. It's my decision of whether or not I'll grant him asylum. And if he gets asylum, Q Prime has agreed, as a representative of the Q Continuum, that they will make Quinn mortal so that then he can't kill himself, because he doesn't have the power to kill himself when he's immortal. And so Janeway makes it very clear, I am not, you know, ruling on whether or not you can kill yourself. I am ruling on whether or not we're going to give you asylum, which is, you know, kind of the perfect kind of Star Trek way of dealing with this. Because
right.
We just need to fill out these forms. We'll figure out we'll look at the evidence. We'll be very logical about this.
Well, and you got to just take some of it, you know, on the strength. You know, it's a TV show. You got to kind of let bits of it slide. But there, of course, if you are even just a little bit of a nerd, then you're going to have all these questions like, so Q's empowered to do that? Like, Q Prime is empowered to, like, is he like a boss continuum guy? He's allowed to speak for the continuum in that case?
That is, so one of the interesting things about the Q Continuum is that the Q Continuum, I believe, and nerds, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
Email Marco.
That's right. Is much like the Holy Trinity.
Okay.
Three in one. It's like a transformer. All the Q and the Q continuum are the same thing. So it's just manifestations of the same force in different, you know, aspects. So I believe, I could be wrong, but I think that's how it goes.
That makes sense. I buy that.
And so he can, as a Q, he represents the continuum, just like the other Q does.
And he used to be a philosopher, is that right?
That's what they say, that he was the philosopher Q, thinking the big thoughts. And I did laugh when they showed, so when they go to the Q continuum, they have an old guy who's reading a book called
The Old.
Which made me laugh.
And a fancy young lady reading The New.
The New, yes. And so he takes the New, which is a magazine, and says to Janeway, this was my last article, and they stopped the presses after I wrote it. And they have this the picture that they have of him just made me laugh. And then it says, I'm ready to die. Are you? And that's his kind of his, I guess, op-ed.
His swan song.
in the New magazine that the Q Continuum was reading. And it just made me giggle. But then that turns out, after that kind of giggle-worthy thing, and I think this is part of what you were talking about, Merlin, about going from, you know, the ridiculous to the sublime, is that he has this very impassioned kind of monologue about how horrible it is to be immortal and never changing, and there's nothing new, and nobody.
We've
wants
all
to try.
Done the scarecrow.
Exactly. I love
but
that.
But I got that.
Bit.
I mean, like, I thought that was a nice bit where you could interpolate that, like, you know, the thing is, for somebody who's immortal, we would think, oh, that's so cool. Like, I can sip Coronas and listen to Jimmy Buffett for eternity. It's like, well, really, though, for somebody who's immortal, that might as well be like the blink of an eye. Because in the blink of an eye, you're going to be bored. Or in the blink of an eye, you're going to be like faced with this existential tedium. So I guess part of it is they do have some, or can have, if you're a philosopher, some awareness of like that passing of time that would actually, you know, weigh on you.
Right. And so part of that also, I thought there were some odd choices, plot choices. So this
many odd plot choices.
Well, there are many. But in the beginning, he's trapped in an asteroid of some sort that Voyager is flying past, and they're checking it out because, you know, even though
of course, you, every time you pass an asteroid, you want to get a sample.
Exactly. That's what you do
but
when
you put up a containment field. You're not a monster.
That's right. And so, oh, whoa, there's not the sample is actually Q. He comes on. Everybody's scared. I have two problems with this. As I often have problems with things. One, they say that he was imprisoned for 300 years. Which to us,
that's a rounding error.
Exactly. To it's immortals. That's like, wow, that's a long time. For someone who's immortal, it's like 30 seconds.
He could do that standing on his head.
Exactly. He was just getting comfortable in his prison. And along comes Voyager. And then the other thing is, so as we know, the Q have awesome powers. And so he's stuck in this asteroid, and one imagines the Q continuum has put up some protection so he can't get out. But somehow Voyager could just beam him out. Easy peasy. It doesn't make any sense to me. But
my daughter was quick to point out how much, especially once you saw what his environment looked like later in the episode, that it was kind of like Loki. And it has some of the same plot problems of Loki.
That is true.
Like, he's on the Isle of Silence, but then sometimes he can go to 1962 and make Hulk see a train crashing. All right, I'm sure that's fine.
You know, just it happens. So I understand they need to get things moving. So, but I'm a nerd, and so I have these problems.
Well, that's my as an outsider who's not familiar with the universe, my only overriding whine about it is that the tone of it was so all over the map. And I liked that it was funny and that it had the fan service, and I could get that. I love stuff like that. Like, as like in Doctor Who, like I'm such a fool for that kind of stuff. Like, I'm such a like a closet Stephen Moffat fan. Like, I really like those callbacks even when they're asinine. But in this case, like, I felt like it got a little bit. It's like it seemed like right when every time the story was starting to really go somewhere, there would be an abrupt shift in tone that would kind of undermine, the not even just the seriousness of it, but like pick a mode. Like, if this is going to be all crazy, let's go nuts and have it be like, you know, like the recent episode of Doctor Who where they had the heist. Like, let's have it be real crazy. Oh, like, yes. That would be okay. But I do think it was interesting. And I guess I know we're running a little low on time. I thought the little twist at the end was maybe not totally unexpected, but very interesting.
Yes, so the impassioned Q Quinn, the philosopher.
Yeah, well, Q Prime has been, obviously, the whole point of the episode is he's dead set against the idea of him having the right to kill himself at all.
Yes, he thinks it's ridiculous, and they're afraid. I think what it boils down to is that the Continuum, as a society and a race, is afraid of what will happen if Quinn were to kill himself.
Because slippery slope, Scott.
Exactly. They don't know what will happen. I think the real fear is that, you know, he's not the only Q that's bored. So there will be a bunch of Qs killing themselves all over the place.
A suicide spigot.
Exactly. boy, I love a suicide spigot. it is clear that Q Prime has at one point looked up to Quinn as a philosopher and has respected his thoughts before he went cuckoo crazy and wanted to die. And so Quinn, in his impassioned thing about, oh, I'm kind of bored and being immortal is awful and here's why, says that he was inspired by Q Prime's kind of reckless behavior that led him to be banished from the Continuum and then reaccepted. It's a long story. And so Q, that's the pivotal moment for Q Prime, where he thinks, well, maybe this Quinn guy is not so bad after all, and maybe he has some good thoughts, and it is kind of boring just doing what the Continuum wants me to do.
But then he, you know, gives him a little help.
That's right. Then he kills him, basically.
He gets him, the stuff.
Although I suppose that is also part of the quandary, right? Q provides Quinn with the hemlock, some kind of crazy alien hemlock.
Space hemlock.
Exactly. After he's been... So Quinn, Janeway decides can get asylum, so that means he turns into immortal.
And right as they're making plans for him to be, like, the greatest intelligence and, like utility infielder this ship has ever had. He's like, they can do away with the entire cartography system with this one. Playing Socrates by himself.
He was by himself. It wasn't clear if he was by himself. So yeah, Q shows up and says, "Here, Quinn, I'll just leave
That's
this
right.
here."
Q Prime does a little like a little bewitched kind of shows up there.
Exactly. And so they don't show the scene where he's ingesting the hemlock, but we see him in sickbay, dying. And Q, they say, oh, why is he dying? And the doctor says, oh, he took this crazy hemlock, which Tuvok is like, well, where did he get it from? And then the Q shows up and says, oh, I gave it to him because, you know, I think he's right. And everyone's Oof. Like, what? and he's like, yep. And everyone's like, oh, the Continuum's going to be awfully mad at you. And Q says, I hope so.
And bum, bum, bum.
That's pretty much the ending of the show. overall,
I thought it was solid. It doesn't make me want to go watch the whole series, but I'm glad I watched it, and I'm glad I watched it twice, and I'm glad I got to finally talk about suicide with my 7-year-old.
It's a gift that was fun. I gave you.
it's funny to dive into any universe. Like, you know, you watch the Doctor Who. Like, it's so difficult to come up with, you know, the right place. Like, I think a lot of us, I can't speak for you, but for example, I'll say, like, regardless of how you feel about New Who, you know, like 11th Hour is a good place to jump in because there's not as much baggage. There's still plenty of fan service if you love either New Who or Old Who, but that's a really good place because that's, you get two new people, you know, you jump in. Mm-hmm. So when you jump in the middle of anything, especially with a literally random episode, I felt like this was a pretty good one. I enjoyed it. I do have some random observations.
Oh, please. I would like to hear.
I really like Captain Janeway. Like, mm-hmm. I get why people really like her. I thought she was super cool in like a million ways.
I'm glad you said that because I wanted to talk a little bit about Janeway.
Please talk.
We don't have a lot of time.
How much time do we have?
We have 5 minutes and 30
seconds. Oh, let's do
seconds.
It. We have time to talk about that, and I think we have time, hopefully, to talk about what a creep Q Prime is.
Yes, let's do that. So okay. I like Janeway a lot. I don't like Voyager a lot, but I really love Janeway as a captain because she's, you know, she takes no crap from anybody, right? So Q Prime has all these little jibes, sexist jibes, really, where he talks about, you know, oh,
you're so angry when you're beautiful.
Yes. Or, this is what happens when you put a woman in the captain's chair. Or he calls her Madam Captain. And I love the moment when he says Madam Captain and she, you know, addresses whatever question it was. And at the end she says, don't call me Madam Captain. and I was like, yes, Janeway, you go, girl. As they say, I don't think anyone says that anymore, but...
Well, they said it. They, back then they did.
That's right. It was a...
It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
wrong franchise.
Sorry. Okay. Cut that out.
But what were your what characteristics about Janeway did you enjoy?
You know, one thing I liked about it is that she wasn't the lady captain. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was there was not an excessive amount of throat clearing. You know, there wasn't a lot of Star Jones style, like, well, as a lady who's empowered to be the captain. Like, there wasn't any of that. She was just very self-assured. And what I'm trying to get at is her performance was great. But also just the way she's presented on the show, there's not an excessive amount of throat clearing about how problematic it is to have a woman running a starship.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's almost none, because it's just like, she's the captain. She's in charge.
Which is totally in keeping, you know, with the universe, right?
Exactly. I mean,
yeah. I mean, theoretically.
Yes. Yeah. And then, so yes.
Uhuru might have wanted a longer skirt. We never asked.
Well, she was just happy to be there. It was a different time. but so let's go. We'll pivot to Creepy Q, because I think it also that plays into it, because there is that scene where I thought, now, not that I should dictate what Janeway wears to bed. But it did seem a little odd that she was wearing some kind of silky gown thing. I don't know how to describe it, but
it was diaphanous.
It was diaphanous. She could wear whatever she wants to bed. It's not my
call. She's the captain, man.
Exactly. Whatever
she
wants.
Don't be that guy. Don't be normative.
I was just surprised. It was not what
I would have expected. I would have expected her to wear basically her uniform, maybe slightly looser.
Yes, that's what I was expecting. And when
something
it was revealed,
very functional.
She was wearing something that was not. But that's her right.
That whole sequence was so strange. And, like, you know, it's weird though, because now I'm wondering I can see why the continuum in the queue would be potentially controversial, because it's got that kind of like, not Jar Jar Binks exactly, but it's got that kind of like, well, anything crazy could happen when these characters mm-hmm. are around, and it could totally, you know, derail the entire scene if we don't use them carefully.
Right. And I think it's interesting. So Q has a history of showing up in captains' beds. It is extra creepy with Janeway and her diaphanous sleepwear.
Well, especially when he's kind of like making continuum moves on her a little bit.
It's true. He does suggest that she replace her long-lost boyfriend with him, which was also... I thought that was weird. I didn't understand why they kept that.
Like, no matter how you read his lines today, they are super creepy. Because there's... I mean, first of all, the entire thing of, like, materializing in somebody's bed is gross.
Yes.
And then thinking that he's pulling it off was, like, extra gross. He's like some kind of like seduction community continuum guy.
Yeah.
You know, I guess he's nagging her. Anyway, I mean, I guess that's just part of the show and you get used to that. If you're a captain, it's an occupational hazard. You're going to find a Q in your bed sometimes.
Every once in a while it happens and then you just deal with it. You have to sleep in the bed that you have, not that the bed you want.
What do you have? 1 minute? We got 1 minute.
One minute, yes. And so, yeah, I mean, Q, problematic. And a little creepy. But although Tuvok they have that nice scene with Q2 Quinn, where he goes to talk to Tuvok, and Tuvok says, are you just rude, or because you don't understand people, or did you evolve this way? And like, he doesn't even understand the question, really. So he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So that was nice.
Can I give you my favorite line from the episode?
Please do.
You could live a perfectly normal life if you were just willing to live a perfectly normal life.
Yes.
That's exactly the kind of duck soup line that really resonates in our house. How am I going to find out what I got to find out? If they don't find out what I got to find out.
I enjoyed, I think Bolana Torres said, this ship will not survive the creation of the cosmos. It's like, good point, Torres. Let's get out of here.
Noted.
Well, Merlin, what overall, thumbs up to this episode? A Voyager, not this podcast.
No, I enjoy your work. I always have. You're very tall. I think I liked it. It makes me want to watch Babylon 5 more, you know, as a new Star Trek fan.
Sure.
I thought it was fun. It's, you know, it's interesting quickly, because I know we're running out, but like, it is interesting to look at this as a time capsule, because like, making a show like this today, my God, you'd be so much more specific in so many of the decisions about this. Like, this is so all over the map in terms of like who it could potentially appeal to and who it could potentially not appeal to. It's really strange. This really feels like a whatever the opposite of a four quadrant movie is. Like you're like, who is this for exactly? It's not brainy enough to be brainy. It's not wacky enough to be wacky. But that was the time. So I mean, as long as I adjust my grading scale for the time, yeah, I enjoyed it, and I would take your advisement as to more non-random Star Trek things that I should look at. I know we don't have time for that, but I would be open to learning more about the Star Trek.
Well, good. That's the least I can hope for. That's what I'm trying to do, is spread the gospel of Roddenberry. Well, thank you, Merlin, for being on.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And now we're done.
Yes. That's not a problem.
Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation's Lessons.